On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
This is SBS Spice.
Welcome back to SBS Spice. You're with Dilpreet. You can listen to our show wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you subscribe and find us on Instagram at SBS Spice. Today, we enter the world of Shakespeare and one of his most powerful tragedies. Belvoir Street Theatre is staging the true history of the life and death of King Lear and his three daughters. Might be the longest title I've read on this show, from November 15 onwards. And in the studio with me is the actor behind one of Shakespeare's most fascinating and complicated villains, Edmund, played by Raj. Welcome to the studio, Raj.
Thank you.
I was going to get into a fun fact. Edmund actually gets one of his most iconic opening monologues in the entire play, challenging what legitimate power even means. In a way, he's Shakespeare's original anti-nepo baby. So we love him.
That's true. That's very true.
We'll get to know more about Edmund from Raj himself. Raj, you're stepping into Edmund for this production on King Lear. Mm. Edmund is fierce. He's very sharp. He's intelligent. But he's also someone who has his identity defined for him before he even speaks. Mm. How did you find the emotional pulse of a character who's constantly fighting a label placed on him by birth?
I think that's probably one of the easier things to connect to, because it's kind of what South Asian people experience on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah,
like we were having some conversations, myself and Eamon, the director, just the other day, and we're talking about the word bastard, and one of his lines is, you know, why bastard, wherefore base, what's with that label? And he's like, you know, what does bastard mean? And we were just talking about, I was like, it means half caste, you know, in other senses. Like that's something very, very easy to connect to. Yeah, what was the rest of the question? It was.
I think you got it. I think it's about the emotional pulse of the character, because I understand, like, of course, him being a bastard, legitimacy, powers involved. He's always fighting for something that is just sort of denied to him before he even has a shot at it. So I understand. But I think if you could talk to me about, what about him do you find sort of most sympathetic? Like, I'm sure you connect with Edmund, and I find him to be quite a grey villain. Like, I don't find him to be evil. Someone who's like, evil for fun, right?
Yeah. I think what I connect to him most about him, he has these lines at the end, which are, you know, Edmund was loved. And I think that's kind of what he is about. If you look at literally what he is in the play, aside from like how I would connect to it, he's someone who is the illegitimate son of an earl, who has been given no title, has been sent away for years, has been brought in to meet the people of the court, and then he's going to be sent away again. And that's his whole existence, and he doesn't have any legitimate claim to any property, any name. Like, he is, you know, in a historical sense, a bastard is quite literally that. And he sort of plots throughout the play to try and be something more and take what he thinks should be his. But I don't think that's an evil thing. I think that's him trying to figure out how to be accepted and loved by something in the world. And if he can't be accepted and loved by his mother and his family, then he'll take it. And it's his way of trying to experience connection and love.
Yeah. I also think it's because he's an outsider. And I think as an audience, we have a soft spot for like the underdogs or the outsiders or people who should belong but sort of don't because of how the system is set. For our Gen Z listeners, I don't know, Jon Snow from Game of Thrones, like he was the bastard child, and he turns out to be like a fan favorite, a hero. We sort of root for him. What are the factors in Edmund or during the timeline of the play, when do you think the audience starts rooting for him? Do you think they do? It's a 16th century play too, right? So in 2025, what would be some of the contemporary factors where we'll find rooting for him?
Because the 16th century play, like you said, like it actually, he's written to be booed, you know? Yeah. He's supposed to be a cautionary tale about overthrowing, you know, the feudal system, which I think South Asians understand quite well because of our caste system.
Yeah.
You know, like it is about birthright, and Edmund is going against what birthright is, so therefore he's the villain. We should boo these lines when he says them. I don't know what people are going to like about him. I don't know if they're going to connect with him at the beginning and then dislike him as it goes on or the other way around. Like, I'm really interested for people to see it and find out.
Mm.
Yeah.
On that note, actually, it's called The True History of the Life and Death of King Lear and His Three Daughters. Mm. What about this production is different from other King Lear productions that we might have seen before?
Well, I don't think it's been a long time since they've done King Lear at Belvoir. I'm sure they have done it before. I don't know when the last time it was. Shakespeare's one of those things that, like, you put different actors into the roles and they make something special with it, and it's just going to be different. There's some gender swapping, but I don't think that's what's going to make the play feel different. I think it's going to feel like King Lear with some amazing actors. Like, the most amazing thing about it is, going to be Colin Friels' take on King Lear, who's playing Lear. Yeah,
that's so true, because the last King Lear production I saw was in Punjabi.
Was it?
Yeah, in Punjab. Yeah. At Punjab University, for our listeners who might be from Punjab. It's located in Patiala, which is my hometown. Mm. And they put on King Lear in Punjabi, and it was amazing, but it was also so Punjabi. Like, the title song was King Lear.
The title song.
Shakespeare. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was like,
you could have stopped it.
Why am I?
You could have stopped it. We had a title song. That's what made it Punjabi. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, wow, you even recorded a Punjabi title song. So Shakespeare is very fluid like that. I agree with you.
You're with SBS Spice.
Coming back to Edmund, his whole story is about hierarchy, right? Mm. Who's allowed to inherit power? Do you see parallels between that and the unspoken hierarchies of our own industry purely as an actor? Not really as Edmund anymore, but like more talking about the theatre industry in Australia.
So you're talking about power in our theatre industry.
Yeah.
And like those, like he's trying to dispel hierarchy.
I mean, who's allowed to tell stories that we get to see.
Yeah.
I'm sure like Australia's theatre scene, I've seen to be more and more diverse in the last like 4 and 5 years.
Yeah.
But I'm also not from here. So I would also have a very different lens of how things have changed and how they haven't. Mm. In fact, like my time in Australia, I think I came 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think in the last maybe 4 years, I've seen the most change. But you growing up here as an actor, entering this industry, what have your observations been like?
I think our theatre industry is miles ahead of our TV industry.
Yeah,
and our film industry.
I'd say so.
Definitely. Like, there's still a real embrace of, you know, what it means to be Australian is having an Akubra and blonde hair in the desert, you know. There's still that really sort of strange
flavor to it.
It's still, you know, Crocodile Dundee is still kind of like what people have it as an image of what an Australian is.
Yeah.
I think the theatre industry is miles ahead. There's still a long way to go within the theatre industry. But like you said, you saw Sex Magic as one of the first plays you saw. Like, that's,
it was incredible.
That was something I never expected would exist for me, because that was one of my first jobs out of drama school.
Right.
And going into drama school, you know, dad's Maharashtrian, and he's like, why do you want to be an actor?
Yeah.
You're not blonde. What the fuck are you doing? Go to Bollywood, I guess, but like, what are you doing? And
oh wow, I love that he like suggested Bollywood, which is so cutthroat over
and
Australian,
so much more full of nepotism.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I love that. That could be more realistic a possibility.
Yeah.
Than to be a brown actor in Australia is wild.
Well, it's about precedent, right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't see these people on our screens, and like, you know, South Asian households, a lot of us don't grow up watching theatre. You know, it's not really something that's been made accessible to us until plays like Sex Magic or Counting and Cracking are being put on, you know, that are attracting audiences for us.
Yeah.
Of us. Mm-hmm. So, I think the theatre industry, to come back to that, like, it's it's got a long way to go, but I think I definitely feel like I have more of a place in it than I do in the screen industry, purely because of the precedent.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, I've been lucky enough to do work in both, but yeah, there does seem to be more comfort in the industry at the moment, particularly after a big play like Counting and Cracking.
Yeah.
Sort of proving that South Asians can lead a play and sell a play.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I also sometimes wonder, like, there's still a long way to go. Like, we also have to, you know, like, push for more.
Keep going, yeah.
Yeah. I'm one of the weird ones. Like, I really want to see a really bad, like, brown villain. Like, I just, like, you know, in film.
Is he done badly or is...
He's just evil. And it just is. Like, I feel like sometimes positive representation can also hold us back because we, you know, we could be scared of, like, being perceived or... But of course, there are some really bad people. Yeah, like, and I just want them to be written. I sort of want us to go beyond the gaze of, you know, whiteness or what other people might think of us, or why do we always have to be in a positive light? Maybe not, right? Yeah. Maybe we could just be a really, really, like, bad person. So that's been my wish for, like, 6-7 years. I just want to see a really, like, brown baddie, you know? Yeah. Like, no redemption whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I mean, not that I'm the person to speak on this, but, like, but there's, like, it's also with female characters as well.
Yeah.
Like, I think it should be exactly the same, where it's like, why should there be, you know, virtuous characters?
Why?
Like, you know, I understand the push, but, like, I feel like women want to do fucking naughty shit as well.
Absolutely.
You know? And why does it just have to be a certain demographic that is allowed to be naughty?
I agree. Yeah. I agree. I also feel like whenever I see, like, a bad female character, she something horrible has happened to her. Like, oh, she lost her child or some maternal instinct. Like, she's always going
to
be...
We have to like her.
Yeah, yeah, we always have to sort of have some maternalistic instinct attached to her for us to, like, feel closely to her badness. But what if she's just...
I think that's why so many people connect with Fleabag.
I love Fleabag.
Yeah, I think it's just like she is so irredeemable in so many ways, but you kind of love it.
And
yeah.
Oh, a brown Fleabag. That'd be so fun. Yeah. That'd be so fun. Fleapreet Kaur.
Yeah.
Was there a moment when you were rehearsing for Edmund that you learned something about yourself? Because you must have been rehearsing for it for a long time, right?
Well, yeah, because we're halfway through right now. I don't know if it's that deep yet. Like, I think intellectually, I know I connect with a lot of the themes of the play.
Fair enough.
I don't think so. I think if anything, like, it's more the nitty gritty of how to tackle the text.
Yeah.
Talk
to me about that.
I do find that is tricky, and it's a hard balance to find. Most actors would know this, particularly actors of my generation, where our sensibility to what a truthful performance is so naturalistic and so spontaneous. You know, talking about Fleabag, like someone like Andrew Scott, he's one of my favorite actors. And
Hot Priest,
sorry. Continue. I didn't mean to use the wrong name. he's so spontaneous. And I think that's the sort of style that we've worked towards a lot as actors. And then, you know, when you look at something like Shakespeare, it's like you have to go back 4 or 5 decades in order to learn how to do it correctly.
Yeah.
But then if you do it exactly the way that you're told to, by following the meter of the text, because it's got a very specific rhythm.
Yeah.
It can feel very empty and like it doesn't mean anything, and it's hard for an audience to understand what you're saying. So the constant battle, and this is what we're all finding in the rehearsal room, is how much do I do it correctly, like I'm a good school kid, and how much do I do it with my own instincts of what I've learned on all the other shows I've done. So that's a difficult balance that I'm sort of going back to drama school a bit, going, what did I do then? Oh, yeah, I shouldn't do that again, or maybe I should do a bit more of this.
Yeah.
That's what I'm discovering about myself more than...
But that would be incredible for you as an actor, right? Because it would feel unnatural at times, and you just sort of have to work towards it being, I guess, natural.
Yeah, it's a fantastic stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really good for sort of learning that.
That's stunning. And it's running for like almost a month and a half, 15 November to 3rd of Jan, 4th of Jan?
8 weeks, I think.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah,
and almost every day.
Yeah. Do 7 days a week. But only 7 shows a week, which is good.
Yeah. Yeah. I was telling Raj before we started recording the interview that that's a Bollywood film, like a 3-hour play just every day, just live, just you're on the go.
And hey, Eamon told me to find some songs that I could dance to. So I don't want to sell too many tickets, but my dad came and saw my last show. We did The Challenge of Mr. Ripley at SDC. Yeah. And I was really happy with the play, and most of the play is just like quite naturalistic, and then there's like a big dance number in it, and I was like, Dad, what do you think? He's like, I really like that play, actually. Good dancing. I like your dancing. Dancing is best part, I think.
We love it. I feel like it's just an intrinsic part of our storytelling.
I know. He's like, you really said it, Raj. Yeah. You really said it. It's your face, you know? And I was like, what about the rest of the play? He's like, it's good.
That was okay.
But dancing is the best part, I think. Do more dancing, I think.
How sweet. No, I love that. Okay, lastly, for listeners listening, who are theatre kids who love watching live theatre, and I'm sure are excited to see more and more South Asian actors in the Australian theatre landscape. King Lear is such a phenomenal, fantastic, like one of the best tragedies ever written. Mm. What would you want them to take away from the show? And I know it's a generic question, but you are talking to, I guess, 18 to like 38-year-old South Asians, a lot of them second gen, a lot of them first gen. You know what? When you were talking about Counting and Cracking, I met a lot of South Asians who had never seen South Asians in theatre, a production like ever before. And they were in their 30s and they were born and raised here.
Yeah.
So what would you say to them about this one? Why should they come?
Look, I think Belvoir, for one, is probably the best stage in Australia in terms of the way it's played, the way the audience feels on top of it. It's super, super bare bones in terms of the way that this is going to be staged. And the selling point of this show for me as an actor to be part of it is we have 14 actors on stage. We have South Asian percussion music as part of the soundscape. Like it's going to be something that feels like a Hindu epic.
Wow.
Like it's that sort of, Lear, Shakespeare is like a Mahabharata. It's like the Ramayana. It's one of those epic tales that sort of really feels familiar to me as someone that didn't grow up with superhero comics, grew up with Hanuman, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think that it's something that's really easy to connect to. And I think the challenge of Shakespeare for performers really translates into the excitement for the audience. And we've got, like, a bunch of South Asians working on this production.
Yeah.
Like Sunny, who worked on Counting and Cracking as well. And like, yeah, I think that, I don't know whether people are going to come based on this, but if you do, it's not going to be, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah. Dude, you dropped Mahabharata in it. I think you sold it. Yeah. All right, we're going to quickly end with 3 very quick rapid-fire questions, and then we're going to wrap it up. Thank you so much for coming in, Raj.
No, please, thanks for having me.
If Edmund could be a spice, what would it be?
Chili.
If Edmund had a dating app bio, what would it say?
Moves from the hips, yeah.
And lastly, a line from Lear that surprised you in rehearsals.
Men are as the time is. To be tender-minded becomes not a sword.
Deep.
Yeah.
Raj, thank you so much for coming in. This was SBS Spice, and see you next week.
For more hot takes from South Asians in Australia, find and follow SBS Spice on Instagram at SBS Spice or on YouTube by searching for SBS South Asian. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.